Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everybody, welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm Rebecca Milzoff, your host, now Deputy Features Editor at Billboard. I have a new title as of this week. Hooray. But I remain your Broadway expert and fan extraordinaire here. So back in March, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know I devoted one episode to composer Joe Iconis. If you haven't heard it, dig into the Billboard on Broadway archives and check it out. Might be a good primer for this week's episode, though you can certainly enjoy it without hearing it. I wanted to talk to Joe back then because, generally speaking, he's one of the most beloved young composers working in musical theater right now. He is probably most famous for writing the song Broadway Here I Come from the dearly departed TV show Smash. But he's an extremely prolific writer of music and lyrics who has kind of accumulated this community of young artists around him over the years, many of whom starred in his 2015 off-Broadway show called Be More Chill. When we spoke back in March, Be More Chill had become what Joe called this monster that keeps growing and growing, because through forces that nobody quite understood, it had become this viral sensation on the internet years after its debut at a theater in New Jersey. Very strange. It seemed like it was destined to play on a New York stage soon, and indeed, very soon after Joe and I chatted, it was announced that a major off-Broadway production would come in the summer. That production almost instantly sold out. It was extended, and it seems like good things happen for Be More Chill after visits to this podcast, just saying, because it was just announced this past week that the show is going to transfer to Broadway in February. Hooray! It's kind of a dream trajectory for any musical, but also a very long preamble to what I've been telling anyone who will listen to me lately, that Be More Chill is maybe the most exciting new musical I've seen in a while. The cast members who came to this week's episode of the podcast, Will Roland, Stephanie Hsu, and Jason Tam, along with Joe Iconis himself, can explain its somewhat crazy plot much better and more entertainingly than I can. But suffice to say, it mixes fantasy, sci-fi, sort of pop culture nostalgia and horror with a very real story of what happens when high school anxiety meets the internet. If all of that kind of brings to mind another big recent new Broadway musical, Dear Evan Hansen, I will just say that though they're both great shows, they're very different shows. So don't necessarily go into Be More Chill equating them. And I will just let the Be More Chill crew explain the rest.
It's from Japan! It's a gray, oblong pill, quantum nanotechnology CPU. The quantum computer in the pill will travel through your blood until it implants in your brain and it tells you what to do.
Yeah. Cool. But we can start with you all maybe saying who you are and like a little bit about your role, since they're all so distinct. Why don't we do that?
I am Stephanie Hsu, and I play the Christine Canigula. And Christine, she's my hero these days. She is a weird little bird who loves theater, and she is a young mind who believes in the capacity of art to change, and she doesn't exactly know what that means and what change is, but she knows it's powerful, and she's not afraid to be herself, and she's awesome.
She's a little mascot for all theater people.
She's a little mascot. I was texting with Stephen Brackett, and he said that she's the spirit animal of the show, and I was very
totally.
I'm Will Roland, and I play Jeremy here, who is the unlikely hero of our tale. He is a high school junior who is in all ways unremarkable. And without giving too many spoilers, he discovers this pill that he can take, which is called a Squip, which is a computer which will implant in his brain and help him to be more chill, hence the title of the show, so that he can be popular and well-liked and get the girl that he likes and... through all this, maybe he becomes someone who is not his authentic self. And I think he is our mascot for learning how to love yourself and how to love all parts of yourself and how to reject the evil lure of fascism.
Whoa.
Wow. You're a different kind of mascot
altogether.
About
fascism.
Yeah. I play the Squip. My name is Jason Tam. I play the Squip, which stands for a Super Quantum Unit Intel Processor, which is the pill that Will Roland's character, Jeremy, takes. And so I am sort of the visual representation of that supercomputer that implants itself in his brain and coaches him on how to be more chill, on how to talk to people that he normally wouldn't be able to talk to in school, on how to interact with people, how to move through social anxiety, how to date girls. So I'm this kind of character that grants him wishes and makes his life better. And then along the same veins as maybe something like Little Shop of Horrors, with the plant that initially kind of makes Seymour's life better and cooler.
That is exactly what
powerful.
I thought, by the way. I feel very smart right now.
Oh, great. Yeah. You know, maybe aligning yourself with a piece of technology that implants itself in your brain might not be the best choice to make. And so events happen, unfold, that there's a bit of conflict between the will of the Squip and the will of Jeremy.
And you wear several very fierce ensembles whilst
looks,
doing it.
Well, looks, yes, as, yes. Looks, as the kids are calling them today.
My name is Joe Iconis, and I wrote the music and the lyrics of Be More Chill. And the lyrics are the words that people say that rhyme sometimes. And then the music is, yeah. And the music is when the words... like when someone is saying them, they sort of go up or down, like this or like this. And the music is that up or down pitch, we could call it if we wanted to, and the rhythm of like how fast or slow the words are said.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, anytime, guys.
I feel like I've learned everything I need to, and we can all leave now.
Cool.
Thanks. So I would like to start by rewinding slightly, because it seemed like this show was done for a while a few years ago. Stephanie, you were in the original production. The two of you are newer to it.
Mm-hmm. We're fans. We're fans who got in.
Joe's been around for the duration, I think, at least. Mm-hmm. So take me back to sort of that moment when things were ending with the New Jersey production. Where were you at in terms of your Iconis awareness, your awareness of the show? And Stephanie, for you, kind of like, what did you think was happening next? Were you just like, well, that was fun?
Yeah, I have always been one, you know, this business is a crazy business. And I've always been like, all I can count on is this exact moment that I'm inside of. And so when the show ended, I was so sad that it wasn't going back to New York, and or that there was no news of such happenings. But I was also like, okay, like, ta-da, Elfin. You know what I mean? And there was definitely a lot of longing in my heart, but I was like, okay, I trust that if it will come back, it will come back. So I kind of just like let it fly out into the ether and, you know, made clear that I was forever a fan and loyal to Joe Iconis and Stephen Bracken and Joe Trace and Chase Brock, but that whatever happened would happen or not happen. And it happened.
Spoiler, it happened.
3 years later.
Well, in a way, it's sort of funny because I was thinking that, you know, this has been an unlikely trajectory in many ways. But on the other hand, like, this is kind of the time period that it often takes for, like, a show to get to Broadway or to get to a more major production can take 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's, in a way, it feels sort of like natural, but maybe the break in between was sort of the break, less expected.
The break in between is definitely a sort of unnatural part of our part of our journey, you know. But exciting.
It was to keep you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely did not think that we would be here talking about the New York production of our show when we finished up at Two River. And certainly never could have predicted that we would get here like the way we got here. You know, it's not the sort of thing that you, like, even if you sort of put your faith in the universe, you're not like, oh, the show in 2 years is going to become like a viral sensation, like in a way that no show ever has. And
it'll
that
be okay.
Will be enough to, like, you know, get us a production on 42nd Street. That's just not like something that you, or certainly that I would not have like dreamed about, you know? So it's insane and amazing.
Hooray.
Yeah. I mean, I think I still don't even understand the capacity of the internet and what it has done for this show, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to go from this, like, off Broadway thing to, like, immediately sold out, like, craziness.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll return to the craziness. But Will and Jason, where did you come from into this orbit?
I was born in 1989. I've talked about this, like, a little bit in various venues. I did some very early development of Be More Chill. I did one of the very first readings at Joe Iconis and Joe Trace's agent's office, where I read the role.
Notable location.
Yeah, where the offices of William Morris Endeavors, where I read the role of Michael, which is now played by George Salazar.
Because alternate reality.
Yeah, well, I'm like, I'm the guy you call when you've, like, got a quirky best friend that you want to hear, and he's only on a page right now. And so I did some very early development, and then there were some more, like, workshops that I was not a part of, and then I auditioned for the production in New Jersey. And I didn't get it, which hurt my feelings at the time, but it all worked out.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's not your fault. In the meanwhile, that same summer that y'all were in New Jersey, I went to D.C. and did this play called Dear Evan Hansen worked out very well for me in the year's interim. And then sometime this spring, I got a call from my good friend Joe Iconis asking me to be in this play. And thus I was given the opportunity to be the leading man of a Joe Iconis musical in a major New York production that people seem to be enjoying. So that's my whole life. What about
you,
Jason?
You speak in perfect monologues, Matt.
I, back maybe like 6 years ago, recorded a demo of Michael in the Bathroom, which is a song that Michael sings. So there's a lot of Michael happening
right now. A lot
of
Michaels
at this table. It literally never leaves your head after you hear it.
It does not. It does not. You are correct. Joe writes some good tunes. And I watched it happen from a distance, and I wasn't aware of the details of that run. I wasn't in the middle of it. And so from my perspective, I was like, oh yeah, this is totally going to happen. It's just a matter of time. I wasn't aware that there was like a period where it kind of like went dormant for a little bit, mm-hmm. which is that kind of right? That's like a thing that happened sort of? Is it sort of like slept?
Yeah. I would use the word dead.
Dead. Okay. Yeah.
But that's the idea.
Yeah. That's the word that I was thinking, and I wanted to be polite, so I said it.
No, man. It's cool.
It died.
Yeah.
It died.
Yeah.
Now that I know the history of it, but from my perspective, it never looked like it died. It just seemed like it was on its. You know, things take time to develop. They take a while to get places. So that's what I thought. And anyway, I'm so thankful that it. Rose from the ashes, and that I get to be part of it.
So, Joe, I'm curious, over the years since the first production, was there interest in other productions, or after the viralness happened, was there like a similar influx of interest in producing it again? Like, how did this kind of come about?
You know, it's kind of strange. In the interim, to be totally honest, there just wasn't a lot of interest because the sort of weird reality of, you know, musical theater, the world of musical theater, is that when you have a show like ours that isn't, you know, based on a bankable property or brand, and there isn't like a fancy commercial producer attached, or there isn't like a really famous person who's in it, it's hard to get people interested in it, you know? And so, especially when it's already sort of had this world premiere production, which we had had. And so it took a while to get it licensed. And so I got it licensed by Rodgers and Hammerstein. And, you know, the rights sort of slowly became available over the course of 2 years. But there just wasn't a ton of professional interest in the show. And then when it sort of started going viral, which was amazing, it took a really long time for me to get people interested in it, even with these like crazy numbers that now everyone is talking about. And, you know, we've been streamed 100 million times and the second most popular musical on Tumblr for 2017. All this like these incredible sort of mind-boggling statistics. They weren't like quite enough to get people to say, okay, I'm going to do this thing for a really long time. And it's actually when I think about when, you know, our lead producer, Jerry Gorin, who's an amazing dude, when he came on board, it was in this year, as in, you know, the calendar year 2018, like this thing did not exist, you know, 7 months ago. It's just kind of nuts to think about how fast it came together when it came together, because it feels so like inevitable now. There's this sort of like, of course, be more chill. But like as the person who is, you know, sending emails and making calls, like I promise, like not of course, be more chill. It took like so much baking and so many dinners and like, and it's just, this is the craziest thing that it's happened in the way it has.
It's really interesting. So when you all come back to it from the various positions you were in, does it feel like kind of just picking up where you left off? Does it feel like a completely different show in some ways?
I, having not been in it, it feels like I'm getting to do a show with a bunch of my friends, because that's the case. That is, you know, I know these people for 12 years and most of them, and it feels really great. I was telling Joe at the beginning, or maybe I didn't tell you, but it was. I'm used to the work that we do together feeling a little scrappier in like a fun way, in a really great way, in a way that I celebrate. So it was interesting to like come into this rehearsal process and have like see everybody on like laptops and see like a wall of specs, you know, costume specs and stage design specs, and it felt fancy and fun and different, and I liked it. It was exciting.
Yeah, I sort of feel like when we first did it, it was like a piece of cake. Like, not like, oh, a piece of cake, but like, oh, I'm like, this is so yummy. So fun. So yummy. I'm out of town. Do you know what I mean? I'm like in great housing.
You're just
like
treating yourself to this cake.
I went to yoga every single day because it was like a 5-minute walk from my apartment. You know, it was like, oh, cake. And now I'm like, oh my God, this is like fudge. You know what I mean? It feels like, yeah. It feels like sinking your teeth even deeper. And or like, you know, you could say like a fine wine, right? Where just the 3 years, I really do believe that good art sort of comes through and shines even brighter when it's exactly the right time for it. And right now, the way that it's all happened and the power of young people right now in the world is making this piece even more powerful and certainly more apparent to me. And so I feel like so grateful to return to this piece, because it just feels like, even though most of the material for Christine at least is the same, I just feel like we've gotten to sink so much deeper into it.
Yeah, it's brand new, except for you know, the little bit that I'd done before, and I did see it twice in New Jersey, and I absolutely fell in love with it, and I was like such an incredible adherent to like I listened to that cast recording like every day for a period of months. I was like, I'm gonna skip to the last minute of Be More Chill because I want to hear that everything about you is going to be wonderful. That was like my like anthem on the train in the morning, which is really lame but true. And so to get to like dig into this material from the text point of view and to get to collaborate with you and with you and with you and everyone. I gestured to the three other people who are on this podcast when I said you.
I'm a ghost.
Yes, ghost Stephanie. So I just like to make that in such a collaborative way was kind of overwhelming and incredible. And also, like, I have, like, you know, dreamt of being in Joe Iconis musicals since I met Joe Iconis, which is about 10 years ago. And so I've had the opportunity to do some scrappy concerts, and we were lucky enough to do the Black Suits together twice. But to do a production in New York City on this scale with talent of this caliber is, like, really amazing. It's really an incredible thing. And we have a lot of fun, and we're all friends. And that's not a thing that happens all the time.
We text each other a lot. There's like a
gig.
Yeah.
That seems appropriate. And what about for you to come back to it? Although, I mean, maybe it sort of never leaves you in certain ways.
No, I mean, as far as actually actively writing it, I definitely, you know, sort of put the pause button on post-Jersey. And so it's been really cool to come back to it. I've never had this experience of having, you know, such a long amount of time between two productions of something in the way that I did with Be More Chill. And so, you know, stuff that I, by the time, you know, when you're doing a world premiere production of a new musical, I feel like you just, it's not that you like finish it once it opens, you just kind of have to stop working on it because it's opening night, you know? So there were things that I wanted to do in Jersey that we just simply didn't have enough time to do. And so to return to the show, you know, come back to it and actually try some of those things is really amazing once after with the added benefit of having 3 years, you know, perspective on the whole thing. And, you know, some of the new material that I've written for the show this time around, I couldn't have written 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a different writer. I'm a different person. The world is different. And I'd like to think that it's that I'm better and that I'm more equipped to write, you know, Be More Chill today than I was 3 years ago. And so it's pretty cool, and it's a really it's an awesome gift, you know. But also there's something to be said for, like, when you're doing that sort of first pass at something, or at least it's really easy for me to sort of access the vibe, you know. And so it's really, you know, when I'm like sort of rolling with something, my brain is there. And so when I was, you know, the first time around when we were doing Be More Chill, I wrote a few songs sort of in the rehearsal process, and I just knew the sound of the show in and out. I had all like the sort of different strains of melodies in my head, and so that stuff just kind of happened. And this time around, it was a little bit harder to like get back on the train, you know. It was like I had to like really remind myself, okay, in this show, these are the sort of chords that I like to go to, and these are like the melodic motifs and stuff that I normally don't have to think about because I'm normally writing things in such a sort of concentrated way. So that was kind of fun to immerse myself in the show again as if I hadn't written it the first time.
That's cool. And yeah, to not be too judgmental about what you did in the past, too.
I was really judgmental, though. I'm quite hard on myself.
It's part of what makes you good.
Well, I think that one of the things that's so great about this show is that it just, like, has this complete, like, forward energy. Like, it feels mm-hmm. like it kind of never stops until the end. Not in an exhausting way, but in a, like, wow, I didn't even realize that first act went by that fast mm-hmm. kind of way. And that feels, like, really appropriate to, like, the energy of what it feels like to be in high school. Like, everything feels like it's moving super fast, and your brain is moving really fast, and you speak really quickly. Like, I feel like I remember from when I was in high school, like, all adults around me always were like, slow down, slow down. Like, you're talking too fast. And I was like, I'm talking at normal speed. What's the problem? So I was curious, what were you all like in high school? Were you at all like your characters?
I was very well liked in high school. I was very popular.
Things have changed. Things have changed.
And now I am a pariah in the industry. No one likes me. There were a lot of things about Jeremy that are obviously taken from me. I mean, we can only, like, we as actors can only get, like, so far from ourselves. We like to think that we're like, oh yeah, I can transform, I'm a chameleon. But, like, you know, with inevitably these characters take on a bit of ourselves. And I think, like, Jeremy makes a lot of, like, shrieks and yelps and noises that are very much from the heart of Will Roland. And there's a lot about this guy's sort of he makes a lot of attempts to fit in and to be liked and to be seen in this play. Most of them go poorly. which I think is more a result of the world than, like, I think, like, if Jeremy here had, like, gone to my high school, he might have had a better time than, like, the school that he's at. Like, I truly think that, like, Jeremy attempts things that I might have attempted, but they just, like, went better for me than they do for Jeremy. Mm-hmm. And so it's part of what I think is in my own sort of, like, figuring out this story and, like, why, you know, why is this kid so tortured by his, like, outsideriness? I think that, like, the world has to be unfair to him a little bit, because otherwise he's, like, he's doing everything wrong. And, like, you know, I'd like to think that he's, like, he's just got the wrong tack that he's taking with stuff. Mm-hmm. But me in high school, like, I did a lot of theater. And that was, like, a very cool thing to do at my high school. Because, I don't know, that was a terrible answer.
No, it's true.
I played basketball when I was in high school. I did. I'm, for those of you who don't know, I'm 4'11 and 3/4 tall. And I played basketball. Grew up in LA, loved the Lakers. I was a really huge, like, social butterfly, and I had a lot of different friend groups. But in primarily my freshman year, I was like, screw drama, drama's lame, I play basketball. And my good friend who I've known since kindergarten, who now is an incredible music artist, his name's Ryan Amador, he was like the one who was like, oh, you should audition for Drama One Advanced, which really was just Drama One Regular, but you just, like, had to meet the teacher, you know what I mean? And I think throughout high school, I eventually quit basketball, but for theater. And I think eventually, definitely, I think when I was young, I've always been very opinionated, the same way that Christine Caniglia is, and maybe less like overtly frantic, but definitely passionate and wanting change and not exactly knowing where to put that energy. But I definitely never felt adored the way that I feel like this show adores Christine. Like, I didn't walk through the halls and hear Stephanie, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I had flirtations and all that, but I did not feel like I was standing on a pallet and sliding center stage.
A team of actors didn't lift you up.
Yeah, a team of
numerous times in the show.
Exactly. So it's been fun to sort of, like, I don't know, she's so sweet. I think I was a little, like, tougher around the edges. Tougher.
Being an athlete.
Tougher.
Yeah, being an athlete.
I'm trying to play with being chill as the Squib. So in addition to coaching Jeremy on how to be chill, that he's sort of the embodiment of being chill. So he's kind of leading by example. I was not chill in high school at all, not even, like, a little bit. I was very much a late bloomer. I was very boyish up until through college, really. So I was like the complete opposite of the Squib that I'm playing. I also remember dealing with sadness and not really knowing, like, why or even, like, what was happening. These just having feelings. And I think that a lot of young adults that are digging the show also sort of deal with those feelings as well. I guess everybody does. It's a human thing. And I think the show does a really good job of addressing those things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very thankful to be part of it for that reason. And I wish I had a Squib in high school, sort of, kind of, that didn't eventually try to take over my entire life.
I was really quiet in high school. I was a really nice young man. I like the term late bloomer that Tam just said. I was definitely a late bloomer, like an after midnight bloomer, super late show. And I loved theater so much. Just everything I did sort of revolved around theater and music. And I, you know, I played piano for all the musicals and I loved them. I loved being in rehearsal. That was my favorite thing. Always, anytime I could be in any sort of rehearsal situation, I just loved it so much. And I would always be, I'd feel uncomfortable to, like, participate in a certain way. You know, I would, like, observe. Like, I loved, like, sitting behind a piano and just, like, watching all of the actors who were, like, so cool and so, like, comfortable with themselves and so, like, you know, outgoing, just, like, watching them as if I was in a zoo or something. You know, just, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the whole world. That was me.
Joe, you are a night blooming flower. Like that is, that's who you are. I love that.
Yeah, nice.
Just pour a little whiskey into the soil. Yes. Blooms right
he,
up.
Yes, and he sprouts.
Do you get called a night blooming flower every day?
No, but he will now.
The first time, yeah.
Make a t-shirt.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Not enough t-shirts. Man. Yeah, so that was me, you know? And people always ask me which character I'm the most like, or the character I was the most like in high school in the show, and it really is like all of them. Like I look at all of those characters and I see parts of myself in like the realest way.
But it sounds like I Love Play Rehearsal would be your personal
for sure. Yes, for sure. But I was in no way as articulate and confident in myself as Christine Canigula is. You know, I would say, like, I would, like, whisper I Love Play Rehearsal to my best friend and then be like, oh, I hope it didn't, like, you know, I hope I was, like, blathering because I expressed my feelings. It would be like that, you know? Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Something that I think is really interesting that you said, Rebecca, and also you, Jason Tam, you were saying that it feels like the energy is just like bursting off the stage. And Jason, you were talking about remembering having so many like feelings and like not knowing what to do with them, or just feelings of sadness or what am I doing? And I think that we've been calling this production of Be More Chill 2.0. And in 2.0, I think something, you know, that we've really learned or that has been really highlighted for us in the past 3 years is like all the young people who have gravitated towards the show are right in that moment. And as you get older, you can like look upon those memories fondly and or whatever, but even still there's a little bit of removal. It just feels so far away, or those feelings were so painful that you don't really want to like revisit them every single morning. Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like we've learned so much. I mean, and the reason why these kids have really gravitated towards it is because they're like exploding with energy and they never get to see something that is really for them that matches the level and intensity of feeling and passion and emotion that they're going through.
Well, I was going to say that the night that I came to see the show, and I get the sense that it's like this every night, perhaps, there was like this line of people waiting outside. And I mean, for people who haven't seen the show, this is in sort of a theater center that's not like a typical Broadway.
I'm just like this show is like nothing the Signature Center has ever seen.
Exactly. I have never seen this at the Signature Center, and it's like I've never seen like stage dooring happen, and there's no actual stage door per se. But it was just crazy to see the teens lined up at the end and like screaming every time someone came out who is usually not one of you, but it was just like, they're coming. No, really, they're coming this time. But it was really like encouraging and cool to see. I want to talk about the Squip wall a little bit, because the Squip wall is really cool. And I guess a good place to start is, since we're at Billboard, we're talking about music. I noticed that a lot of the names that people write on the post-its are actually like musicians and artists. And it was cool to see like what a variety of people were there. Are there music artists who have been Squips for all of you throughout life?
Oh,
now,
man.
Past?
If I had to like choose a specifically musical Squip, I might have like a David Bowie Squip, like a Mel Torme Squip. to give you two completely different flavors. But I think also we live in like American English parlance. The word rock star is synonymous with the words cool and the words famous and popular and celebrity. You know, they're all like, to be a rock star is to be the coolest possible thing you could be. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like not, you know, I'm not surprised that like so many people are like, yeah, like Katy Perry is my squip, or, you know, I don't know, Katy Perry is the coolest person I could think of like at a glance.
I think mine would be a four-part combination of Grace McLean, mm-hmm. Kendrick Lamar, Chance the Rapper, and Beyonce.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not you even Beyonce, but I had to like toss her in there because how could you not?
Yeah. Yes, completely. I want to know why Mel Torme.
I mean, just think about like what he represented as this sort of like croony sex symbol. And I mean, like there's no voice that like melts a heart and a crotch faster than Mel Torme.
Crotch okay. melting. Yeah.
Crotch melting crooner, Mel Torme.
Absolutely. I would also second Bowie just because of his unrelenting passion for what he did and his involvement in every single aspect of his artistry and how bold and daring he was and how ahead of his time he was and true to himself. I think at the time that I was in high school, my squip probably would have been Sondheim.
Jason.
I know. Because he helped me understand what it was to be human in a way that a lot of other people didn't.
Yeah, my musical squip in high school definitely was Sondheim, and he's one of my three squips now.
Where are your other two squips?
Martin Scorsese and Kermit the Frog.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, that's my squip trio.
That's a good squip trio.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Kermit's kind of musical too, you know?
Yeah.
He's a helpful squip and I think, you know, guided me towards like family and loyalty, but also like, you know, being chill sometimes. Like Kermit's a really good.
He is very chill.
Sort of like,
well,
yeah,
sometimes
like
he's not chill at all. But yeah.
Well, no, I know. Actually, yeah, that's so funny. But I think of like I'm thinking of like sitting on a lily pad, Kermit, like Rainbow Connection,
yeah.
Kermit. But he also, you know, he has multitudes in him because then he also has the like arms above his head, screaming Kermit.
Yes.
So yeah, yeah.
And so much great Muppet music too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, the Muppets truly, I think, are one of the best musical collectives of
yes.
our time.
I just started rewatching Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided that it would better my life. And the first episode alone has like so many different musical genres represented, including like the trash heap, who's kind of like a Borscht Belt comedian.
Yeah.
It's like it's a lot to take in.
That's great.
Could have an entire podcast about Fraggle Rock. do you guys read The Wall like from time to time? Because there are also funny things on it too. I saw somebody's squip was like her grandmother's eggplant parmesan, I think.
I've glanced at The Wall. What I get is I get texts from our producer, Jennifer Tepper, with pictures of The Wall. Because I'm like afraid to hang out there because I'm like a very, I get very like anxious about strangers coming up to me when I'm off the clock. Strangers is a word that I use to describe people I don't know personally. So I've gotten some, I've seen some cool ones, like my attorney's name was on there. Jessica Kent is someone's squip. the squip wall is amazing because it's amazing, like, people are so wonderful. People's brains are so incredible and creative, and, like, the crazy stuff that comes out of Christine Canigula's mouth is, like, contained within all of us at various moments. And the squip wall is a great representation. I'm trying to think of some other like gems. I saw Charlie Rosen's beard was one of them. That's Charlie's our orchestrator.
Wow. That's specific.
Oh, I just thought of a new squip for me. Sorry. Going back to like 5 minutes ago, Patti Smith.
Good squip.
Yeah.
Well, really see, and
squip.
Also I was like, it's so funny. We're all like, oh my gosh, my squip. I didn't say that the squip that I wanted to say. But my, when I would say
just like that.
Those are like music squips. The voices in my head, if you will. Those are my music squips. So when I was in high school, my music squip would also have been Regina Spektor in a very big way.
Yeah.
But my real squip in life, I really still stand by this. I said this randomly once at a talkback, and it's a tree. And it feels important that I make that clear.
So on brand for you, Stephanie Hsu. Oh, also Eddie Vedder. That would be another squip of mine during high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What I love about the squip wall with the post-its, I was thinking about this on the way here, is that I love the interact. We had some version of that at Two River. I think it was just like a What was it?
It was like an easel where people wrote on.
Yeah, it was like an easel.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Post-its are so reminiscent of, I don't know if you saw the Post-it wall that happened in Union Square.
Mm-hmm.
After,
oh, yeah.
the election. And I think that is so, that. I was thinking about that on the way here and I was like, I love this Post-it squip wall because it provides a sort of platform for these young people to be active and speak and have conversation in a way that is so reminiscent and parallel of something that took place out of a very intense moment. Mm-hmm. That's the most politically correct way I know how to say that.
Especially with all the fluorescent colors, it's like such a physical manifestation of like so many, all the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All the feels.
I'm like obsessed with it. And because I am not in the show, I spend a fair amount of time in the lobby and like in the hallway, you know, where the squib ball is sort of overtaken. And it really does feel like it's like become part of the structure or something, you know, and it's amazing to now like when you walk. When you walk down the hallway to go in the doors of the theater, you now have to sort of walk through a portion of the hallway that's covered in the squip wall. And it feels like, oh, you have to like literally walk through the collective like energy of all these people who have come to see the show. And it's so, it feels so correct.
There
it's
is
like,
a
it's kind of moving.
Huge collective energy. I mean, people come up, you know, they cosplay, they come up dressed in various costumes, some of which are meant to mimic and some of which take it to like a whole next level. Mm-hmm. Like this piece is inspiring so much creation because they'll also do like fan fiction and they'll do fan art. There's like an incredible amount of fan art that's happening online having to do with this show. It's so cool to watch this show inspire that in other people. Creation.
So, Jason, you mentioned Little Shop of Horrors before, and I definitely wanted to talk about all the sort of influences that are floating around in this show because it brought to mind so many things for me. And I think it's cool that, you know, it feels so of this moment and modern and, like, with it. but at the same time, there's a lot of nostalgic stuff in it, especially like sort of 80s kind of stuff that I think like Weird Science, Little Shop, like a lot of those kind of sci-fi meets pop culture moments. So I was curious like sort of what things were infiltrating your brain when you were working on it, and is anything come to mind for the three of you being in it?
I mean, there's so many things like that sort of worked their way into the writing of the show, like the actual like writing of the songs and musically and lyrically and the orchestration too. But certainly you know, the big sort of umbrella touchstones for myself and Joe Trace as we were creating the show were 50s monster movies, you know,
50s
like sort of like Space Invaders movies, like this idea of like, you know, this alien force infiltrating a population of people.
Totally.
Which is where the sort of theremin stuff in the show came from. You know, we have a theremin in the musical.
I always love a good theremin.
We're one of the few.
This is real good.
It's pretty amazing. We're one of the few musicals ever to have a theremin in the pit, in the orchestration.
More theremin,
right? And so that sort of came from there. And then, so it was that, and then 1980s sort of teen horror movies. Was a huge influence on us, and specifically me and the music. So a lot of like John Carpenter stuff. All of the keyboard sounds in the show are pretty much ripped off from John Carpenter scores, both well known and obscure. You know, and it's something that I was like so obsessed with when we were first doing the orchestrations of the show, to be like, oh no, it has to sound like the keyboard from Halloween 3, or it has to sound like this like weird, you know, synth sound from like The Fog, like this real specific stuff that like probably no one will ever notice, unless if John Carpenter comes to the show and sues me or something. But it's just, I just think it like, it adds to this, like this feeling of like, oh, this thing, there's something off about this world, you know, and it makes it impossible, I think, to not think about the style of it and why it's styled in the way it is. But yeah, so we had the 80s horror, 50s alien movie, and sort of 90s teen comedy, you know, stuff like Can't Hardly Wait, and even like The Faculty, you know, the horror stuff. Those were sort of like these the genre touchstones that we wanted to write in. And Yeah, yeah. But, you know, even, like, the references in the lyrics of the show, they're very specifically kind of all over the place, and none of them are contemporary. You know, like, we and within the first minute of the show, we, you know, I talk about Rob De Niro and Joe Pesci, you know, very purposefully and specifically. Like, I'm not talking about, like, a Kardashian, or I'm not talking about, you know, like, whoever, because I think I want it to feel like it's this world that is now, it's contemporary, but all the characters are, like, sort of referencing things of the past, you know, and it's sort of, mm-hmm. I think it's, like, everyone in the show is sort of, these people are impossible to categorize, you know, and they're sort of these, like, messy, misfitty people, and it feels like the references should also kind of be messy and misfitty in that way, and a little bit, like, out of date. You know,
there's definitely, like, a lot of nostalgia in the show, mm-hmm. for sure. The orchestrations, mm-hmm. a lot of them, when appropriate, are so synthetastic. and there's something, you know, Michael Mell, the character, is obsessed with discontinued soft drinks, like the, mm-hmm. the Ghostbusters tie-in drink, Ecto Cooler, and Crystal Pepsi, and all, like, Mountain Dew Red. And there's something really cool, I think, in the zeitgeist right now about that. I sort of noticed a little bit of it in Ready Player One, mm-hmm. and in Stranger Things. There seems to be this kind of, like, effort to reward people that are aware of where they came from, of where everything that's mm-hmm. happening now came from. And I dig it.
And I think that, you know, in addition, piggybacking on both of those ideas, both the sort of richness and all these things in the score and the book that, like, people might never even notice, mm-hmm. and this sort of, like, these pop culture Easter eggs that are, like, littered throughout our design and throughout our writing and throughout our performances, you know, I think that our show, like so many shows, like or like any show, like, some people come to it and, like, oh, they, like, you know, they get it, they get the broad strokes. Some people come to it and they're like, they don't get it, they're like, I don't know why people like this. And then there are some people that come and they, like, they get it so profoundly that I'm, like, amazed at how many things they pick up on in mm-hmm. like a single viewing. And I'm, you know, mm-hmm. we obviously have, like, these people who are, like, super fans of the show who, like, know every single word of it. But the most amazing thing to me is when someone, like, sees it for the first time and points out, like, all these things that we all know are in there, but I just assume they're like, oh, no one's going to get that. It just, like, makes it a little bit richer. But, like, these things are, like, really, really, they hit people in, like, a gut level, and they recognize them, and it gives them a buy-in mm-hmm. to the piece that you might not have if you didn't so carefully pack it with richness.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, I have to ask the three of you, because we have to give Joe some flattery. I feel like the way that you've spoken about Joe's music is the way people always seem to speak about his music, is like, I was dying to be part of the Joe Iconis family. And, it, you know, it's a rare thing to inspire that kind of fandom. So what is it about Joe's music that's so incredible, both to hear and perform? I mean, watching you in the show, I was struck by just how many words there are. It's like a lot of words to say.
Best lyrics being written today. Yeah. I say that with no exception.
Yes. Yeah. So I was just curious, what is it about Joe that's so great?
Go ahead.
No.
I think his words and music are bright and dangerous. I think they're bright. They're shiny. They make you lean forward. They're entertaining. They're earworms. And they're also edgy and very specific and very, like Stephanie was talking about, just these people that these characters, these high schoolers that are bursting with feelings. And I feel like Joe can write about somebody that's bursting with feelings in a way that is very unsentimental, in a way that I love. I think that is such a fine line to walk, to be able to talk about bursting with emotions without coming across as being sappy and over sweet. And I think that Joe does that with an art that nobody else does.
This sounds incredibly trite, but it's like the first thing that came to mind. I'm going to say it into Joe's eyes. And you can't see me saying these into Joe's eyes, because you can't hear my eyes. But here, you just get it. You just really get it. And I feel like when I hear your music and your words, it's like I am, like, riding a stream, and the stream is both melody and lyric, you know, and it's so simple in so many ways, and yet so, and it's profound because of that. Like, the new song that has been written for Jeremy is just when that got brought into the rehearsal room, I think all of us were just in tears because, I mean, like, the hook is like, whoa, and yet it says so much of, like, how you how we as humans process, you know, feeling or thought. We're not necessarily always like, well, you know, I am going to think about this and think about that. Sometimes it's just like blah, 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 you know, or yeah. And then he puts that, Joe, you put that to music and pitch and tone, and it's, yeah, it's so expansive, and it's unlike any writer I know that is out there, and it's incredible, and I'm so grateful. And you're so funny. You're so funny in, like, a kind of a dopey way, you know? But it's so amazing.
And I, first of all, I want to say thank you for giving us this opportunity to, like, look at Joe and tell him how good he is.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite I couldn't look at Joe when I was talking.
Yeah, we usually can't do this outside of the bar. But I, I'm going to crib some quotes from Joe Iconis and from the great Sean Simpkins, who is a great collaborative friend of ours through the years. The thing that Joe does that I think resonates so deeply is that you write in characters' voices in the exact words that they have. Yeah. One of the things that you and I have discussed is, like, it's so awful when you have this, like, you know, mumbling, stuttering character who all of a sudden turns to the audience and speaks straight effing poetry at you. And it's like, what the hell? Like, if all of this lives within this person, like, why can't they just say this? And so you write in the addled, challenged vernacular of the characters that you create. You then set them to bold and interesting melodies. You make everything rhyme, which is really hard to do and takes going the extra mile. And then when those words run out, to quote what you said and what our friend John has said so many times, is when you're out of words, in so many Joe Iconis songs, these sounds come in, these na-na-na-nas and these oh-ohs and these uh-huh-uh-huhs, all of these things are the feelings and the desires and the inner soul of these characters and these people who are just like us. And we don't have words for those feelings. And that's why we do musicals. And that's why these musicals reach such an emotional height that they can no longer be spoken nor sung, but they just have to be sounds. Our favorite scene in the show, well, my favorite scene in the show, consists of Jeremy and Christine on a couch, and Jeremy doesn't know what to say because his squib is not working, and Christine says, just say what's on your mind, and all Jeremy can do is, I believe in the script it says, Jeremy makes a noise, and that is what we do every night. We make a noise because there is no word in English to describe how we're feeling and what we're trying to say, and this guy does it better than anybody.
That's a really enjoyable moment.
This was fun.
Thanks, everyone. I feel like I was here for my own memorial service or something. It's a nice way to spend a Tuesday or Wednesday. What is today?
At your own funeral.
Wednesday. Yeah. Yes.
Oh my God.
Well, can I do a real quick thing? I'm so sorry. I process things really slowly, so I'm constantly going back to things 15 minutes ago.
I love it.
So I just...
Your squip is...
No. Oh. I have a question for Stephanie. Your squip is a tree? Can you please talk more about that? Like, that just sank in. What kind of tree?
Everybody
is it a specific
very
tree?
Okay with that, so I was like... Oh, really, really.
Well, it's interesting that you said what kind of tree, because I recently have been thinking to myself, you know, I don't know enough about specific kinds of trees, and I'm really working towards a world in which I am better at identifying trees and their healing properties. But what I mean by that, oh my goodness, I can't believe
right
that
his head is on the table and he's dying.
Well, I just, you know, similar to how, you know, when we as humans don't know, so we make sound, or we know, we woo woo wah wah, I have to find ground, and I really believe in the ways in which there are patterns inside of nature and nature's structures that teach us how things work, actually. Mm-hmm. And a tree is quite powerful and has root systems that also connect to other trees. And so sometimes when I don't know something and am lost, I often look to nature and how it functions around us to better understand how to either stay rooted or follow or trust the natural resilience that is actually all around us on this planet.
I love that.
That's
That's great.
Musical theater.
Is your inner voice like an Italian gangster? Or?
I said it earlier in the program, and in case the last 10 minutes hasn't made it clear, we're all friends.
You're all trees.
Well, it's very sad when I tell people about the show because I'm like, it's the best show ever, and you kind of can't see it yet unless you have a ticket. So I was told that there's maybe like some news of like, if you don't have a ticket right now, like you should not give up hope in terms of seeing the show.
There's a cancellation line, mm-hmm. which you can get in an hour before the show.
Excellent.
You put your name on a list and they give you a ticket if there's a ticket available. There's also a lottery available via TodayTix, which you can enter on the day of the show. And, get a pretty affordable seat.
Mm-hmm. It's like $29.
I didn't know about the lottery. Yeah. People should lotterize.
Do the lottery.
Yeah. And it's every day. The lottery is every day.
Yeah.
Excellent. And I think it's a digital lottery too, right? Like you don't even have to show up.
Do it from the comfort of your computer phone.
It really promotes laziness. Yeah. Or it can be the reason. Say you haven't left your apartment in a day or 3 days or a month or something. Mm-hmm. If you win the lottery from
normal
chill, it'll be the reason that you get out of bed. And so it's we're doing a huge service to people who can't leave their apartments.
You can also
for one reason
apparently
or another
buy tickets on StubHub for like $1,000. So, you know, if you want to drop some coin.
Yeah.
And you guys got an extension, so it's going
we got an extension
longer
it's
than
it's
usual.
Going so well.
It sold out in like 6 hours or something, right? Something crazy
it's
like
insane.
That?
Yeah, it's insane. It's really cool. It's
very
feels
cool.
Like there's actual like human beings who want to see our show.
There
like,
are.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. Yeah. And we actually have some exciting news in that after we finish the run at the Signature, we've decided to all get together and just do the show on a street corner somewhere in New York City. And so we're going to do it.
What?
It's, don't worry. I'm going to tell you guys later. But we're going to do it. We're just going to perform it on a street corner. We don't know where, and we're not going to tell anyone. But if you happen upon a street corner after the run of Be More Chill at the Signature Center is done, and you see the cast, or what you think to be the cast of Be More Chill at the Signature Center, performing the entire show a cappella on a street corner, you will be correct, because that is what we're going to do.
I love busking.
Wow. It's, yeah. Yeah.
Showtime.
Well, I was just going to say that I deeply hope that there is a life for it beyond the Signature, and I'm glad to know that
there
already
is,
will be. I mean, what more is there to say? Well, thank you, guys. This has been fun.
Yeah.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.
I love play rehearsal because it's the best, because it is fun. I love play rehearsal, and I get depressed as soon as it's done.
Be More Chill is playing at the Signature Theater in New York through September 30th. Like Joe said, if you want to try getting tickets through the show's lottery, go to todaytix.com. Or you can just prepare to buy tickets for the Broadway production, which will begin performances in February of 2019. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please subscribe, give us lots of nice reviews and stars on the platform of your choice. We're on iTunes, but also on Spotify, Google Play, among other places. You can tweet about the podcast using hashtag Billboard on Broadway. I'm at Rebecca Milzoff. On Instagram, I'm Ya Down with RMM. And hope to have you back next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.